Welcome to Game Store Profits, where we talk about God, gaming, and groups. I'm your host, Daniel Fisher. Along with me, my Uncle Moneybags, Mike Perna.
That is literally the antithesis of what reality actually is.
But come on, man. It's a Monopoly moment.
Oh, no. No, I know exactly who you're referencing. I know exactly what you're going for here. And no, in no regard is that in any shape or form me. But, you know, whatever. We deal. We move forward.
Well, how you been doing, Mike? I have not been on here in, what, a month?
Trust me, as the guy who's had to come up with stuff to do, you know, to make sure that the podcast keeps rolling, I have a great appreciation for the fact that no one's been around. I've been good. I've been good. And I'm sure we will be spending a lot of time talking about it in the very near future. I actually got in, like, some legit gaming, and it wasn't even ministry-related. It was just games I wanted to play.
That's cool. Yeah, I haven't gotten in a lot of gaming here lately, but I have got to do some D&D planning. That's about it. So,
well, when it comes to role-playing games, like, this is something that a lot of people who are only into board games who listen to us probably don't. Well, they probably understand, but don't really understand. The prep for any role-playing game, I mean, D&D especially, but literally any role-playing game, that prep is no joke. Like, it's not something that's like, oh, gosh, maybe I'll throw together something for this afternoon.
I mean, I could throw together something.
Oh, it's
going to be the greatest thing in the world, but
it can come together, and I'll say that there are certain systems that are better at it than others, but
yeah.
But especially, like I said, especially D&D, which is very much the algebra of the role-playing world, there's a lot that goes into prepping D&D.
Yeah, and you got to think that for every hour that you're going to play, you got 2 to 3 hours of prep. And so I've got two things I'm working on right now. One, I've got, at my new job, I got all these people wanting me to run a D&D game for them. Then I also got the Boy Scout thing coming up. We actually finally set a date for it, and you know, we're super stoked about it. And hopefully it'll be near the end of next month, but all the Scouts are excited.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Is there any kind of, you know, exciting preview we can get about what the Boy Scout game is going to look like? Because we're like bought in now with the Boy Scout game. Like, so, we've been talking about it for so many episodes now.
All right. So this is exactly how it's going to play out. All right.
But you got wait, hold on, double check, make sure your kid is not there, because he's playing in it, right?
No, she's playing, because my daughter is a Boy Scout. We let them in early, so, because we're a family-oriented Scout troop.
Oh, yeah.
So, she's actually in her room, but what we're doing is we have to break it up, and we're going to do one group on a Friday night, and one group on a Sunday afternoon. All right, and on Friday, we're going to have offered three types of games. We're going to have a Pathfinder game, we're going to have a 5th edition game, and we're going to have a Castles and Crusades.
Right.
All three games are all running the same module.
I know. You mentioned that already. Well, I want to know what you're doing.
Dungeon Magazine, issue number 4. It's called The Falcon's Nest.
Okay, that is vaguely familiar to me.
And it's from, I think it's The Falcon's Nest. I believe it is. It's from like the mid-80s and getting that old school feel going on. I've got a dice manufacturer cutting a special dice for the Boy Scouts that have the pack troop number on it and the Boy Scout logo for D6s.
Oh, look at you.
And so I'm trying to find somebody I've got a few sets of dice, but hopefully I'll have more sets come in because somebody in China loves me, sent me a whole slew of dice. And so I'm going to have those. I'm going to hopefully be giving the kids some dice and giving them the dice that they're playing with. I'm going to give the DMs that are playing 2 D6s of these wonderful dice. So they'll have extra dice, and they'll have something to remember it by. This is going to be super exciting. I'm so stoked about it. That's all I can say about it.
We're gonna have to make sure we come back to this in future episodes, because
I'm going to try to record the audio.
Oh, nice.
So, because I'll have my laptop there doing sound effects as well. So hopefully I'll have my phone out recording the audio of the kids going insane.
Yeah, because like I said, you've mentioned this game for like a handful of different episodes already. Yeah. So, you know,
it's getting there. It's getting there.
We've bought in. We want to hear more about this game.
Yeah. And then, well, and on that Sunday, the Pathfinder group won't be there because the guy who was, well, he might not be. He may be able to do it that Sunday. But he says that, you know, church is an issue on Sunday with him, so.
Hey kids, Future Mike here with the first of what's probably going to be a number of interruptions in this episode. Now, in this particular instance, it's because we forgot to talk about a thing, and I'm going to remedy that. Later on, there's going to be some times when I have to kind of jump in to tweak things and kind of redo kind of what we were talking about, because for some reason, either, you know, my computer glitched or my dog was making a lot of noise in the background, and so the audio was screwed up. But there'll be other times when I'm going to have to jump in to try and just recapture what we were talking about. But that said, this first interruption is because we got so caught up in what I'm about to say because I've been waiting to talk about the game that we're going to jump into for a long time now. But we got so caught up into it, we forgot to talk about the Archive Dive, our one and only segment, and we forgot it. So I need to come back and remedy that. The Archive Dive, in case you are new, is when we look at a game that is at least older than 1 year, because for one reason or another, the hype train generally tends to fade off after a year, because once the year has passed, a whole other collection of games have kind of taken over the reins of the hype train. And so we want to kind of look at games that are great, but have kind of long since had the hype train completely die down. It has entered the station never to leave again. I say never. This one might get a little bit of a bump, and it's actually why I want to bring it up. The game is Spectre Ops. It's designed by Emerson Matsuchi, and it was put out by Plaid Hat. And when I think of hidden movement games, this is the game I think of. Spectre Ops has you playing as one of two sides of this struggle. You're either playing as the agent who is trying to, depending on which, how you want to frame it, you are either kind of grabbing files or blowing up targets or all sorts of different things. But basically you are going around the map trying to take out four different targets and leave the map before you are discovered. The other players are going to be the hunters, and the hunters are trying to take down that player. They're trying to find out where they exist, find out what they're up to, and stop them at all costs. And so I absolutely love this game because it does hidden movement very, very well. It at no point does either side feel helpless or like they're on the run. It's tense, but it's not, you know, there's no point where it's like either side like feels like they're helpless. The hunters have really cool abilities. The agents have a ton of gear. And I've never walked away from a game of Spectre Ops not having a good time. And so I want to bring that up partly because, you know, the game came out in 2015, so it's 3 years old now. It's kind of settled down into that place where people still know it, people still talk about it, but not nearly as it was when it first came out. This is the game that introduced me to Emerson Matsuchi as a designer, who his games I have fallen in love with since then. And they have just kind of broken out the fact that Spectre Ops is getting a standalone expansion called Broken Covenant with more stuff in it. And so I want to make sure that we get that out there. That said, this is going to be the first of a couple different interruptions. I will look forward to seeing you later. I will return you to Daniel and Past Mike. Future Mike, out. All right. Well, let's go into other things that have been happening. I can say it now. It's been so long. It's been just sitting there on my shelf.
I don't hear it.
It has been mocking me. And I'll give you a little bit of the backstory here. For the longest time, my wife and my buddy's wife have been conspiring against us. Well, they've been conspiring for us. Both of them separately have said our husbands need to get together to play games. Like they need a game day. And so it took a while because part of the reason they came to that conclusion was both of us have been busy and stressed out and all sorts of ridiculous stuff has been going on. So it's been hard because they live about an hour and a half away. So it's not like, it's not like you can just pop over. Like, it takes planning. And so I happen to have a bunch of stuff that I'm like, look, dude, TavernCon is coming up and there's a bunch of games that I haven't played yet and I need to get them played. And he's like, I'm at your service. And so, he came over and we actually ended up, because Rising Sun requires three people, we recruited, Brett Anderson, AKA my local painting guy.
So is he going to paint it for you?
He's painting my monsters.
Okay.
We actually had an interesting conversation about the fact that, you know, each clan actually is sculpted in the color of that clan. And so I actually don't mind if the clans don't get painted. Like, would I mind? Like, of course, I'd love it if they were painted, but I'm not upset if they don't get painted, because it's kind of visually striking just to have, like, this is my guy because it's my color, but he's going to paint the monsters. But anyway, so we came in and we played the first game out of the gate. We ended up playing for something like 9 hours that day, but the first game had to be Rising Sun.
So how was it?
It was everything that I hoped it was going to be.
See, this makes me jealous because, and I made a mistake, guys. If you know anything about me, if I get a game, don't let me paint it first. Just say, Daniel, let's play this first. But the moment I say, I've got to paint this game, I start painting it. I won't play it until it's painted. And so I've gotten two of the monsters done, and I haven't had a lot of time to paint them. I just want to play it now.
Well, I completely understand, because now I have often said that when it comes to my top 10, top whatever games that I have, that I will never unseat a number one after one play of something else. Like, nothing's going to jump right to number one.
No.
Nothing will jump to number one. No. I still abide by that rule. Nothing after... Give me a moment. Nothing will jump to number one after one play, because there's so much nuance in a game. And for the number one spot, you really do, because games are so good anymore, you can't just be a good game. You have to be a great game. You have to have a lot of nuance. You have to have a lot of different strategies. You have to really grab my attention. I will say unequivocally, it's number two.
Oh, wow. That's... did it unseat? Was it Scythe?
Number two would be Blood Rage.
Yeah, because Scythe moved to
number one. Scythe is number one.
You know, that leads me to something. I'm going to buy the Scythe Jr.
My Little Scythe? Yeah. As everyone should.
Oh, I saw those pictures of it, and I know it's going to be at Gen Con. But I know if I pre-order it, I could pick it up at Gen Con, but I gotta use birthday money, so I have to hold out. I have to hold out and hope they have some left.
Yes, but before we get off track on My Little Scythe, because my goodness, we can talk about My Little Scythe. In fact, we might by the time this episode's over. But with Rising Sun, without doubt, it overtook Blood Rage. Not that Blood Rage is bad, or that I'm like, oh, forget Blood Rage. I'm not one of those guys who, like, quote-unquote, replaces games. Like, I don't do that. There's plenty of room for Blood Rage and Rising Sun on my shelf. Blood Rage is still a very good game that I will always be down for playing. But the same reason that I like Rising Sun more is also the same reason why I completely understand why some people are like, I don't care for it. This game is so negotiation driven. It is so like, hey, can I help you? Maybe you can help me, or hey, I think both of us need to team up because this guy's going to kill us. Or there's so much of that going on constantly. There's so much of these side deals going on. And let me just put it this way. If you don't like negotiation, you're not going to like Rising Sun. It's a fine game without the negotiation, without the politicking.
So you say that if you enjoy bartering for properties in Monopoly, you're really going to enjoy Scythe. I mean, not Scythe, but Rising Sun.
No, not necessarily.
Come on, I'm just trying to turn this all back to Monopoly today.
And I don't know why, because you hate Monopoly even more than I do.
I know, it's just, I haven't been here, and I'm being a little silly tonight. I'm just excited about being back.
This is what happens when you disappear for a while.
Yeah.
But,
life.
But it's really good. Like, there was one time when my buddy Dave from across the table looked at me, he goes, Mike, you want this, don't you? And I'm like, well, yes, that would help me out immensely. He goes, if I do this action, which will basically give you the thing that you want, say, you know, next round, you want to ally with me? And I'm like, yes, I think that could be arranged, potentially. But I do want to quickly kind of break down what happens in a round. There's so much, like, nuance and stuff, whereas Blood Rage is very deterministic. It's like, yeah, we know what we've got. We can figure out, you know, you see all the cards when you draft them. Like, you know what you're looking at with Blood Rage. With this one, it's so much more up in the air, so much more kind of open. But, so the first thing you end up doing, which is really fun for us, because the very first thing you do is called the tea ceremony, where you basically say, okay, do we want to have an alliance? You know, what's going to happen there? Does anybody want to kind of team up? Well, we were playing a 3-player game, and so we're like, okay, so it's the tea ceremony, and all of us are like, 2 of us had never played before, the 3rd of us had played, but had never played a full game, because it is a longer sit.
Yeah.
So, you know, as a guy with kids, he hadn't finished his full game. So all of us are like, I don't think I want to team up with anybody yet because I don't know what that means. So we're all kind of awkwardly looking at each other going, I think I'm going to go alone this round. But, so that's great. And that again is all politicking. It's all like, hey, this is the board situation. Like there was already, you know, even though we didn't know what we were doing and we all kind of wanted to just see what a round by ourselves would look like, we were still kind of looking at the board going, okay, this is going to happen this round. And if I don't ally with somebody, I'm going to be in trouble because both of them can just come in and attack me from both sides. Like, it's very easy to kind of be like, all right, no, we need to start making some friends and not upsetting people early on because there's a potential. And I will say that Brett kind of got sandwiched. Wow. And it didn't go well for him. He was playing the Turtle Clan and he had to run from his homeland because we pretty much destroyed him.
Now, let me ask you this. Do you regret not getting the big rollout map?
Yes. 100% yes. You want to know why I do? Because Dave did get it, and he brought it over. We played on the giant rollout mat.
And then your little board over here.
And my board, I'm like, oh. But anyway, going back to what, before, you know, oh, I could get on all the tangents of the FOMO that exists.
And you know how I am about chasing those goat trails too.
Oh yeah. Oh no, I'm aware. But to kind of go back to what it is so each round the people get a chance to kind of pick a political mandate, and the political mandates are things like martial, where you move your guys, you can train, you can recruit. So training is if you've ever seen Rising Sun on a table, or if you've ever played Blood Rage, you know how you can spend points to get crazy monsters or cool units and stuff like that, or upgrades. That's training. You get those things and add them to your army. Recruiting is you are trying to get pieces off the board onto the board. Harvesting, if you have the superior force in an area, each area has their own stuff that you get. So harvesting basically says, I'm going to get whatever in the places that I have the superior force in. And what's really interesting is that, like so many other games that I've seen, the person whose turn it is, whatever one they pick, they get like a certain benefit, and every other player gets kind of a lesser benefit. But what's also interesting is that it'll say, like, you and your ally, which also kind of gives you an incentive to kind of ally with people, because that means that not only are you going to get the cool Uber benefit on your turn, you're also going to get it on your ally's turn. And when I talk allies, I have to then bring up the last political mandate, which is betrayal. Betrayal has a cool thing that, because you'd think, like, if you're not in an alliance, why would you ever bother picking betrayal? But betrayal actually does kind of allow for that, because it has just a board kind of placement aspect, even if you've never been in an alliance. I believe it's you take two different pieces from off the board and replace them with your guys. So it's particularly entertaining and particularly powerful, because like we were seeing, my buddy Dave had the Earth Dragon like right off the bat, and that dragon got replaced by just some random dude because of Brett playing betrayal. So you've got all this stuff going on, and pretty much you're going through and picking one of those. It goes around the table. Everyone kind of does their thing related to that political mandate. You do that a couple times, and then you get what's called a worship phase. And it, basically, if you sent any priests to these temples, they'll give you some kind of benefit. You'll get coins. You can do extra movement. You can get some Ronin tokens, which are basically Ronin are kind of guys you can kind of throw in to fights later on, because there's only one kind of battle per season. So everything is gearing up. This is another reason that I kind of like it, is that instead of having it be like battle, like there's only one battle round per season. And those battles happen in different locations. So not every location is necessarily going to have a battle. So even if you've got, you know, warring factions in the same place, they don't necessarily fight that round. So it gives you the opportunity to plan and to be like, because there was one point where I was allied with Dave, and Brett was over there, and Brett was marching on Dave's location. And I told him, I go, look, I can't move to help you. I said, but there's also not going to be a fight there this round. As long as you can hold out and just chill, I'll be there the following turn, because that's probably when we're going to see a fight there. So you've got so much going on in this game and so much that's happening. And I haven't even gotten to the battles, which the battles are, the battles are so interesting, because it's a bidding system. Because there are different kind of steps to a battle. And if you can put coins towards different aspects of the battle, and if you happen to be the person who put the most coins into a certain aspect, you do that thing. So there's things like Seppuku, which basically says, forget it, this is a lost cause, we're just going to kill off all my guys and get honor that way. You can take a hostage, which not only takes a guy off of the enemies off the field, but also you'll basically sell that guy back to his daimyo for honor points, which is the what they call victory points. So you've got I think my favorite one of all of them is Imperial Poets, which basically says it's the Loki strategy of this game, because if you bid on Imperial Poets, for every dead unit, whether it's yours or theirs, you get honor. Mm-hmm. So you're trying to outbid each other, and before you think, oh, that just means whoever has the most coins wins, there's a series of these battles. You have the same pool of coins every one, and if you win, you basically, the price of winning is basically taking those coins you use to win the battle and divvy them up amongst the losers.
So you make it ring?
Pretty much. especially because all the clans are different. And Dave was playing the Koi clan. And the Koi clan has the ability that every Ronin token that they pick up, like I said, there's different ways to pick those guys up. But for every Ronin token he picks up, he can change them into coins. So there was one point where you have to declare at the beginning of a battle phase how many coins you have at the start. So I was like, I have 8. Brett was like, I have like 9 or 10. Dave's like, I have 24. And so we all kind of sat back and we're like, okay, yeah, whatever Dave wants to do, he's going to be able to get to do. But at the same point, whenever he won a battle, if he threw too many coins into that pot, suddenly we were the ones flush with coin. So yeah, he might win an early battle, but then we come back and just trounce him after that. So just because somebody has the most money doesn't mean the rest of you can't do anything.
Right. That's cool. So I'm excited about this now. I have to get it to the table.
No, I think the only reason it wouldn't become number one is because of the fact that I don't swap out my number one game after one play of something else.
You know, it's going to be a game we're going to have to play online. You know that, right?
Oh, I'm down. I'm 100% down for playing this online if it's on Tabletopia or Tabletop Simulator or something.
They've got a complete edition on Tabletop Simulator. I've been looking at it right now.
No, because this game, there's so much going on. It's a game where if you look at it and like hearing me talk about it is potentially confusing, especially if you've never seen the board, if you've never seen the pieces, if you don't know what any of this stuff is. Like, it can easily sound very confusing. Like, there's so much going on and so many moving pieces and so many things you have to worry about, because you have to worry about your honor. You have to worry about everybody's different units and which units have special abilities and if they have upgrades or not and what those upgrades are going to do later on in the game. And there's so much happening in a round, so much happening in this game. But when you're actually playing it, it's so simple. Like, the actual mechanics of the game are very easy.
That's good.
And so, yeah, no, that is my wheelhouse right there. Games that take forever to really fully understand. Because in a three-player game, one, you know, I want to play it with the higher player counts. Yes, it will make the game longer, but at the same point, like, there was only ever possibly going to be one alliance at a time during our game.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's only three people, and you can only ally with one other person. So I want to play with the higher player count to kind of get what that's like, alliance versus alliance. But there's a lot of, like we only saw three of the clans. There are more clans that we haven't played yet. And they do crazy things. So I want to play them again. I honestly don't think I'm going to play my clan that I played. I played the Fox Clan. Fox Clan's kind of claim to fame is that if a battle is happening and I don't have any guys there, I can mysteriously pop one guy in. So in a fight that I wasn't going to be in, poof, suddenly I'm in.
Right.
So... Yeah. And that led to some cool moments, but at the same point, I'm like, man, I'd love to try some of these other things. So the fact that there's so much going on that I have yet to explore, it gets me excited to play it. It gets me going. And plus, again, if you can work a good alliance, like I was doing well, but I came alive in the third season because of the fact that I was allied with Dave. And Dave was doing all his stuff, and I was just kind of riding his coattails until I just came in. And that's how I ended up winning the game. A well-timed betrayal can make or break that game, and figuring out when to be allied with somebody and when to have everything for yourself, because you got to realize, yes, you're benefiting from an alliance, but so is the other guy.
Right.
So you're trying to figure out what the balance is to doing your own thing as or getting the benefit of having some – like I completely understand why some people think that this game is overrated. I love it. I absolutely – sign me up any day of the week to play this game. I love it. I think these miniatures are breathtaking.
Hey, that's the reason why I fell in love with it to begin with. It's just the miniatures. You know, I've never seen, in the Kickstarter, I've never seen miniatures so beautiful before. And when we got them, yeah, they're plastic, and I'm not saying anything wrong with that, but what I'm saying is, these things have to be molded, and there are a few imperfections in them, but, you know, they clean up just fine.
Yeah, no, I love it. And even silly things like, yes, we got the Kickstarter version. So, yes, I have Godzilla. And, yes, of course he came out to play in our game.
Yeah, we have the monkey, yeah.
I was the one who recruited the New Zealand Shepherd.
Yes.
A.K.A. the monkey guy. I could his special power is really cool, and oddly enough, it would be fitting for a guy who is a shepherd in New Zealand. Basically, if your monkey guy is in a place like you get to, like, you know how I told you that only the first player gets like the primary kind of awesome version of a thing, whereas everyone right. else gets junk.
Yes.
For the harvest mandate, you have. If you're the person, you get all that cool bonus of whatever wherever you have superior force, you get those cool bonuses. If you're not that guy, all you get is a coin. Unless you have the monkey guy, and anywhere you have superior force with the monkey guy also gets to harvest.
That's good.
So again, it's fairly fitting for the guy who was actually a New Zealand shepherd.
Yes.
But yeah, no, I love that game. I absolutely love it. The fact that I've been talking for the past 20 minutes about it makes you allow for the fact that I love it. Yeah, no, it's if I have the ability to sit down and play this with people, I this is my game. I love this. I love it a lot. I can also there were two games that I got to play that the auspices of this game day. We're like, oh, I gotta learn stuff for Tavern Con, which Rising Sun was the primary reason for that, because I knew people would want to play that. There's no way I could have those kind of minis and that kind of game and not have somebody want to play it at Tavern Con. So, we had this stack of games and a couple of them needed to get played, but, at the same point, we kind of threw in a bit when we're like, you know what? These are just games I want to play. And one of them was literally just, I just want to play it. But the other one was, I've only played it a couple times, and I do need a refresher because it's a really good game. I really, really enjoy it, but I've only played it a handful of times, and so there is still so much more to learn. So the one that I've played over and over again, which my excuse for getting it played was that I, on International Tabletop Day, when I went into our local game store, even though they weren't having an event, I'm like, look, I'm here, I'm representing Inroads, I don't want to be the guy who just shows up and it bugs out and not buy anything. So I picked up a new Phoenix Born for Ashes. The character's name is Jericho Kill. Jericho is an assassin, and I kind of love everything about this deck. It's the only deck I know that can have giant elephant riders in the same hand as the Lucky Rabbit.
See, but the thing is, though, Mike, it's unfair, because you love everything about Ashes.
I do, I really do. No, it is my go-to two-player game. It is my game of choice for the two-player kind of head-to-head game is Ashes.
Well, our local shop canceled their event, and I found out why. And it makes me sad, but I understand. So it was they canceled because, you know, they did get a good turnout, but in the eyes of a shop owner, it wasn't worth the money because he still had to buy the games to give away and stuff like that. And it didn't help his business out very well. But at least he didn't cancel Free RPG Day.
Well, I understand not canceling Free RPG Day because a lot of that stuff is... Yeah. is I mean...
It's not, cheaper than...
It's cheap. It's cheaper.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, it was a little... I was like, oh man, I was going to try to do so much, but oh well.
Well, yeah, no, I actually had an interesting conversation with the guy who runs our local shop because I'm like, hey, you're not doing anything for Tabletop Day? And he goes, no, because this happens to be the same weekend where an Infinity War came out.
Yep.
And also a Magic the Gathering release at the same time. Pretty confident I wasn't going to get enough critical mass to make Tabletop Day worthwhile. I go, No, I don't fault you for that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I played a game of Ashes. I basically taught Ashes, and I still love that game. I won't spend too much time on it because y'all have heard me talk about Ashes. Ashes, I still say it's a crime that not nearly enough people are getting into that game as much as I'd like, because every store I walk into, I ask them, I said, hey, you know, does anybody play Ashes here? And everyone's like, no. Like, it never hit at all.
And for y'all out there listening, I didn't enjoy Ashes. And Mike knows this, because we played it one night together, and I didn't really enjoy it. And it could be the fact that we played it, like, very late, and I was very tired.
You were very tired.
So, and when I get too tired, I get a little delirious, and I get impatient, so.
Yeah, and this is not a game to be played impatiently.
No.
It's definitely a more strategic game. But, anyway, yeah, so Jericho is cool. I enjoyed playing that and enjoyed teaching that. I also got to play Alien Artifacts.
Oh, yeah, how was that?
I already knew this was a great game. It made my top 10. It's a fantastic game. The thing that I love about it is that it does have so much of the 4X gaming experience in a much more compacted kind of package.
Mm-hmm.
We played and Dave had never played it before. In fact, he'd never played a 4X game before.
Whoa.
So he'd never played a 4X game before, never played Alien Artifacts before, and we still got done in like an hour and a half. So that kind of lets you know that you're dealing with a much more compacted space when somebody going in that blind still was able to move through that quickly. It's an interesting game because of just the way it handles everything. So the different, you're not doing a lot of the kind of, you're kind of doing it in name only, the expand, exploit, you know, all that, all the four X's. You're doing them, but only kind of, because it's different types of cards. So everything is ships you're building, technologies you're developing, or planets you're kind of exploring.
Wait, are you saying this guy's never even played games like Civilization?
No. He only just got into board gaming at all.
But, I mean, isn't StarCraft a 4X game?
Yes, never played it.
You've got a lot of educating this guy.
I know. I'm working on it.
That breaks my heart. Because StarCraft's one of my favorite video games of all time.
It's fantastic.
It's quite possibly my number two. The first StarCraft is my number two video game. And my number one is Heretic.
Wow. You got there's a deep cut right there.
Dude, I'm serious. I still think about that game. and you know, if anybody's like, hey, let's play this, I'd be like, okay. I love that game, especially when you turn people to chickens and stomp on them. It was like one of the best games ever.
But yeah, so we're playing that. It was interesting. I played a faction that I'd never played before, which is the clones.
Yeah.
The cool thing about the factions, what kind of sets up the different factions in this game is that you start off with different things depending on what faction you are. And you also have a different way of obtaining victory points at the end of the game. So the way the clones work is the clones, they don't start out with any ships. They don't start off with any planets. It is all technology. So you get four different technologies. They are all in the kind of waiting to be built, the under construction phase of things. And at the end of the game, the clones get points for every expand card that you have played in your empire. Mm-hmm. As well as every technology, specifically technology in the logistics version. Because every card has an operational and logistics. Basically, operational will do an action, whereas logistics kind of affects other cards. It gives you kind of bonuses and stuff like that. So it was the first time I'd played the clones, and I'm not, you know, upset with the clones. Like, I enjoyed them. But Not normally my thing. Normally I like to go more for the ships and attacking. But But yeah, no, it was a very solid experience, even with somebody who didn't know anything about the game.
Yeah, that's cool. I was getting confused there a little bit earlier when you first mentioned it, I think, with Cosmic Encounters. Matt's got Cosmic Encounters. My buddy Matt, who lives up the road, he's been trying to bring it over to play. But yeah, I mean, it looks like a tight game.
Yeah, no, Alien Artifacts is very nice. It's all that goodness of a 4X game that will usually take between 2 and 8 hours, and says, hey, what if we kind of give that vibe in a smaller package? It's interesting because apparently I have, I don't go all the way up to the mega epics. I don't have, your Civilizations or your Twilight Imperiums. I don't go that far.
Yeah.
But I have Eclipse, which is my big ticket 2 to 4 hour sit. I have Alien Artifacts, which is my 1 to maybe 2 hour sit. And then I have Universal Rule, which is a pocket game, which is a wallet game, created by the folks over at Button Shy, which is this tiny little game, which is also a kind of a 4X experience. So I do 4X in every stage of the way.
Well, yeah. I've been trying to get into some Button Shy games here lately, but I want to start taking board games to work, and I think this is a good place to start. But yeah,
I have 3 words for you: circle the wagons. Circle the wagons is bar none my favorite, which stinks because it's one that I don't have.
Now you did mention 8 hours. Which game lasted 8 hours for you?
Oh, Twilight Imperium will always last 8-ish hours.
Oh. Because, I mean, as far as, a 4X video game, I've taken StarCraft over 16 hours.
Oh, no. Video games are a whole other thing, because they can just add stuff and... Yeah, no. That's a whole other thing. I'm talking board games.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no. It was so good just to... And I think you can appreciate this, too. I often tell people when they're like, oh, you must be playing board games all the time. I go, not really. Yeah. Primarily, the reason why I'm not getting games played as much as I want is because I'm running events. If I'm doing gaming, I'm running it, which means I have to be available to explain games, which means I have to be setting things up. I have to be making recommendations. I'm not sitting at the table. In fact, as we're getting closer to TavernCon, we're just, by the time this goes live, we're just a couple of weeks away. TavernCon, I maybe allow myself to play a game. And even then, that's only a game I'm teaching. I think the one game I got played last year was Scythe. And it's because a group of people wanted me to teach them how to play it. And it's just easier for me to teach as I'm showing people.
Yeah, I think that's one thing that people don't realize about us, because they do think we play games all the time, is the fact that when we're at these events, and we've mentioned this before, we hardly get to touch games other than, hey, you should play this game right here.
Here, I'll give you the example. So a kind of running trope in some of the forums for board games and the like is something called the 10x10 challenge. And I applaud the 10x10 challenge. I think a number of people in the tavern are doing the 10x10. And the idea is it's take 10 games that you have and play them 10 times throughout the course of the year, where you'd think that would be so simple. But for some of us who have 100 or 100 plus games, taking 10 and playing them over and over and over again when there's so many things that you might possibly play, it is a bit challenging. And so I just came into this going, there's no way I can do the 10x10, because I look at the games that are my 10 favorite games, and they're all these 2 hour sits, and every game group's going to be different, and the gamers in my area don't want to do that. They would rather have one game that they play 6 times in 2 hours than to have one game for that whole time.
Plus we have children that we need to feed.
Exactly. So I gave myself the 10x1 challenge, which is literally just get my top 10 games played once throughout the year.
Oh, yeah.
We are now in May. As you are listening to this, I'm going to date this episode. We are in May. of 2018.
I'm already dreading our final episode of the year.
We are in May. I established this in January. I have played 3 of my top 10 games. Guess when all 3 were played?
This weekend.
This weekend. And the reason being is because we established this as we're just playing this because we want to. These are guys who I've played with for ages. These are guys who not only support Inroads, but some of them have literally volunteered their time to make Inroads happen. These are guys who know that this is part of the ministry, but don't really feel like they need to quote unquote be ministered to at this particular instance. They literally are just buddies of mine who are like, we just want to play things.
Those are good people.
Yeah. And it was such a relief to be able to be like, I don't have to explain things. In fact, the biggest game we played, I didn't even have to be the teacher. Dave taught that one. And so it was so nice to not worry about being the teacher. It was so nice to just exist as a gamer amongst other gamers playing a game. And it was so beautiful. Like I don't want to overstate this. It was a game day. Yeah, it was a 9-hour game day, but it was still just getting together to play games, and we had, and we'd stop for food breaks of sandwiches, and we had tacos for dinner. Like, it was the kind of thing that you just do. Like, so many people just do this, but at the same point, for me, it was so desperately needed.
I think a lot of people don't understand the fact that we are people that desire to play games, yet because it turns into a ministry for us, we kind of get that joy sucked out a little bit because we don't get to play the games.
Well, I don't even think I understand where you're coming from, but I kind of want to change that. It's not that the joy gets sucked out. The joy is different.
Yeah. We get to see people enjoying our favorite games.
Right. We put ourselves in this place where we kind of facilitate that joy, and we get the joy of seeing that happen for other people. And that is a good and wonderful thing. Like, I don't want to say my life is somehow, distraught from doing this ministry. I love doing what we do.
Right.
There's no doubt about that. But yeah, no, there is that kind of separation. Here's kind of a churchy kind of illustration of this. I spent years doing youth leadership. Years. And specifically years in the current church I'm at. I was there for a long time. In fact, the kids that came into the high school youth group, as freshmen are now graduated. And some of them are now out of college, which is insane. So I'm able to hang out with these guys now that I'm not a youth leader, now that a lot of them have graduated from college. It's not the same relationship, but at the same point in the back of my head, I'm always going to be their youth leader.
Right.
Because that just exists, that ministry mindset that I have spent so much time building into this person and seeing them develop. And there's a pride to that, but there's also just this thing like, I'm going to be your leader now. It is like there's a switch that you it's really hard to turn off because you just get into that mindset. Like when you see them, when you are in this place, this is what happens. And so many times when I'm running gaming events, that ends up happening. I don't get to just sit and play games and just run them because I'm doing the work of the ministry. I've said it before and I'll say it again. This is the hardest anybody works, having a good time. Because we do like go out of our way to connect with people and to have that. Like if we see somebody standing around, we got to go out and connect with them and see what they're up to and stuff like that. And all that stuff exists and you can't just sit and be focused on any one table when you're in that mindset. So it kind of puts this spin, and I think something that I've been listening to lately has been really interesting to kind of fashion just the way I see ministry, not just in our context, but in any context, really. There's a podcast I've been listening to called Failed Missionary, and I would highly recommend it. I will say that if you want somebody to tell you happy, fun, shiny stories of what it's like to be a missionary, please don't ever even kind of listen to it. There are actually some of the crazy stories involved. There are even people who go and talk about being out in the mission field and come back and basically say, I don't even know if I believe in God anymore because of just how much this mission experience has wrecked me.
That's frustrating.
But like that's the kind of thing that it's interesting to me to kind of parse some of this stuff. Because we go into ministry opportunities thinking that, oh, it's going to be this, and I'm going to help these people, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to see this, and I'm going to, you know, we have this image of what it looks like, and so often it doesn't.
Right.
And the important thing is not that we let our kind of say, our misrepresentations of what ministry is like, you know, get in the way of the fact of doing ministry. Like when we have this moment of like, oh, I'm going to go in fresh faced and wide eyed and be like, this is what's going to be like. And this is going to be awesome. And so many good things are going to happen. Like I just had somebody contact me recently and he was asking me about the ministry stats, like how many people are coming to Christ and how many gospel conversations do you have and how many of this and how many of that. And I'm just like, I don't take those numbers. Like, yeah, I make sure that people are having cool conversations and getting to know people. And I do want to hear stories about, you know, if there are any kind of, you know, particular God moments in our events and stuff like that. But I don't take stats because I don't care that much about the stats. You know what I mean?
I mean, yeah, you get into a numbers game that way and it starts to affect your walk. In a way, because I've seen this actually happen in mission trips where people come back and from a day out and like, how many did you see saved turn to Christ today? I saw 15. Well, I saw 17. Well, you know, and it starts to get into an argument about, you know, who did it better, and that's why I don't enjoy stats on this stuff, because of the fact that it can ruin the experience.
Well, that's why I love this podcast and why it's painfully beautiful to listen to this, because so much is like they're caught up in like they go into the mission field being like I want to do this thing, and then they go out and they actually do the stuff and they enter into all the logistics and the craziness and the expectations of other people on them, and it just gets ugly and nasty, and they see all the underbelly of what goes into making this happen. And yeah, it's the stories that I'm hearing in this podcast, and the there's a couple people especially that have kind of been hosts of that show and have kind of been guests on that show. I want to read more. Like, some of them are like making books about their stories and stuff, and I want to read those books now because I'm fascinated by this process. I'm fascinated by this concept of, hey, sometimes you need to remember that you are a human being, that you exist and you have your own stuff you've got to deal with, that you are not some kind of God machine, that there are sometimes that you have expectations of yourself that are unfair, and there are sometimes that other people have expectations of you that are unfair. And, you know, sometimes you just have to step back and like, all of this is because for one Saturday, I was running games for myself. and you know, I kind of do it flippantly, but there are so many times when I've talked, like, heck, think about it. The reason you and I have Rising Sun,
it's because somebody loved us enough to buy it.
is because a regular was listening to the podcast, said, you guys have been talking about this for so long, and at least to me, direct comment to me was, this is a gift for you. It is not a donation to the ministry. It is a gift for you because so many times people don't understand how much work goes into this, and I just want to make sure that you know that you're appreciated. And I still remember crying when I got that email.
I think when I got that email, I was kind of jumping a little bit because, you know, I was like, what? Because I've never had anybody do that for me outside of family.
Yeah.
And it just, it was completely, completely wrecked me. And because, like, you know, it's just one of those things, if you don't expect that to happen in your life and it happens, it's just, it starts to change the type of person you are. And I'm not saying give me gifts, it makes me a better person. But what I'm saying is that it got me to a point where, you know, if somebody's like, man, I really want that, you know, eventually it might show up in their locker at work or something of that nature. And it's turn me into a more giving person.
Well, I think that you're right. Yeah, there's potential for somebody to hear this and be like, oh, well, these guys just want us to send them free stuff. Don't send us anything.
Yeah, send because, it to somebody else.
I mean, if you want to, I'm not going to stop you. But here's the thing. Like, one, yeah, it has. It's done it for me, too. You when you receive that kind of stuff, you're like, oh, man, you know what? I want somebody else to feel this awesome. And so you start giving it out. It's the whole pay it forward thing. So there's that aspect of it. And there's so many different ways that you can kind of spin this to be like a beautiful thing that we can do to kind of honor people who are doing hard work and doing good things and who might not get any recognition. Like, there are so many people who make a Sunday morning happen in a church. Either there are so many people, many of whom don't get recognized, or you're in a smaller church and there's one guy
that does it all.
That does everything. And I promise you, he gets more grief than he gets praise. So in either of those situations, either there are people behind the scenes making stuff happen, making Sunday morning work that you don't even know who they are because they're just doing what they love. Or you are seeing one person who is just driven into the ground trying to make this happen because it's the only person that the church can afford to have.
Or the only person willing to step up.
In either of those situations, you have people who it's so easy to just say, you know what, for one moment, I want to appreciate what you do. I want to show you that the work that you do is meaningful and powerful, and maybe if, depending on what it is, maybe be like, hey, one Sunday, I want to take your thing for, I want to take your job for you. I want to give you a Sunday where you can just do stuff, where you can do what you want to do. Here's the thing. There are people in a lot of churches, not every church does this, but if you're in a church that has a nursery, that nursery, at least in some cases, will have people who don't get to go to church because they're taking care of other people's kids. And so maybe one Sunday you volunteer and be like, hey, I want to take your shift so you can actually go into the church service. Something so simple, something so, you know, I don't want to say insignificant because taking care of somebody's kids is definitely not insignificant.
Oh, yeah.
But one Sunday kind of is insignificant. It's one Sunday is just such a small thing, but it can mean so much.
Yeah. I mean, and especially, I mean, I'll give you an example. You know, we're talking about the nursery deal. We've had people quit over people asking them to be in the nursery for one Sunday.
Yeah.
At our old church. I mean, it got to a point where we had people do it just because nobody else would do it, and they didn't want to do it at all. But when you walk up to somebody, it's like, hey, can you volunteer in the nursery this Sunday? And then the next Sunday, they're not at church, and they don't come back just because of that. And I give mad props to people who work with kids at church. That's all I gotta say, because I don't think I can do it.
But yeah, like having this game day where I wasn't playing for ministry purposes, when I was literally just getting together, no, like, yeah, our buzzword is play with intentionality, but every once in a while, I just want to play with no intentionality other than I want to play, I want to sit back with a beer and I want to play with my buddies. And just both the acknowledgement of needing that and the ability to make that happen is something that I think all of us need to be able to do. Because, you know, a lot of people who are listening to this do ministry on some regard. Not everybody, but to some extent, we're all doing ministry. Or we have families. Or, you know, there's something that you do that you might absolutely love, but even if you love it, it doesn't mean that it doesn't take work and it doesn't take effort. And every once in a while, you need to be able to say, you know what, just one day I don't want to worry about the effort. One day I just want to be able to relax and to just enjoy for the sheer sake of enjoyment. I played for 9 hours and it was the most beautiful thing ever. Not, you know, not because the times that I'm playing for ministry are bad, but because it just took the pressure off for a day. Because even though we love this, it is work. And sometimes you just need to be able to step back and step away and relax. Heck, Jesus himself, every once in a while, would just disappear with his buddies.
Heck, he'd disappear on his own sometimes.
Yeah. And, you know, if he did it, I'm pretty confident we need to. So, yeah, I think that's the perfect kind of wrap-up thing. If you need that, you know, heck, I promise you, if you need it and you're like, oh, I can't make that happen in my life right now, hit up the tavern. If you listen to this episode and you're like, yeah, you know, I really need that. I need to just be able to just step away for a minute and just play some stuff. Tabletop Simulator exists. Tabletopia exists. A couple episodes ago, we were talking about all the different board game apps that exist and ones that are coming up. We can make some, heck, even just hit the Discord server up and just relax with people.
Yeah, there's lots of people there just talking nothing about Critical Role all the time.
Yeah. So, like, there's amazing ways that you can do that. And if you say, hey, I just need to just chill out and be ridiculous for a little bit, I'm pretty confident we can make that happen. Because it's important. Being able to care for yourself and you know, make sure that you're doing okay. Trust me, as guys who have been, you know, pretty much the entirety of your host squad here right now have been dealing with, you know, to some degree or another, some kind of mental health issue, either for ourselves or for those around us. So as three guys who are constantly dealing with this stuff, we know that this is important, that you need to be able to do this. You need to be able to just call a day. So if you're in a spot where it's real hard, schedule that crap. That's what calendars are built for. You know, put it on the calendar. Make it happen. Find a way to recharge yourself. And then, you know, once you do that, you can get back in. You can get back into all the other stuff that is wonderful and, you know, painful at the same time, because that's just what ministry is. It's wonderful and painful at the same time. I think that's where we're going to wrap up. Again, I do want to hit up just a couple quick little news things. If you're listening to this, probably in the very near future, I'm going to show up on Saving the Game, which every once in a while I feel like I want to just throw out, you know, all the different, you know, friends of the podcast that we have out there. You know, you're Saving the Games, your Min-Max podcast. You know, there's all sorts of stuff that's going out into the world, and they're good people, and you should check them out. I also want to bring up TavernCon again. TavernCon is coming up June 9th. If you're in the greater area surrounding New Jersey, or you don't mind a good long road trip, June 9th from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. It is our annual fundraiser. I'm very excited about this year. The potential for some really cool stuff to happen is super high. We've got Sean running Gaslands. We've got Brett doing his paint and take stuff. We've got some amazing food. We've got the Inroads traveling library is larger than ever. So I do want to just do a quick rundown of companies that have donated games to us. We've got Portal Games has given us some stuff. Restoration Games has given us some stuff. Our friends at Kara Games have given us some stuff. We've got a amazing stuffed owlbear coming in from the folks at Whimsyworks. We've got I just got an update from our friends at Geekdom House, who are donating a set of three-dimensional dungeon tiles. Handmade three-dimensional dungeon tiles.
What?
Kyle is making them, he's putting them together as we speak. Hey kids, Future Mike here. I know I had told you that there's going to be a bunch of interruptions from me. I was actually able to tweak some of the audio, so it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. But there is this one last time that you need to hear from me. When I was talking about all the donations for TavernCon, there was one company that I neglected to see, mostly because as I was looking at everything, I had one pile to my left, and I completely just overlooked this pile of stuff to my right, which it basically entailed all of this stuff. You may have seen a Kickstarter preview on our site when it was going on for Animo, which is a Pokemon kind of inspired card game. Basically designed to engage with kids, to talk about morality, to help them memorize their Bible. It's a really good game for what it does. And we were, you know, excited to reach out with Josh and kind of build that relationship as he's getting going and is really seeing a lot of really good buzz going out as he's traveling. His Facebook is just jumping with all the stuff that they're up to. But Josh said, "Hey, I don't have a lot of stuff that's already in production because it's a Kickstarter and that takes time." He said, "But if you're willing to take an IOU, I'd be happy to get in touch with anybody who wins to kind of give them stuff." So I said, "Absolutely," because I want people to have the opportunity to have this game and to play this game. And so he basically said, "This is what I'm going to give." He has a starter deck that he wants to give out. A starter deck plus one booster pack. He has a starter deck, both expansions, and the playmat, which that playmat he actually sent up the physical playmat that has been produced, and it looks gorgeous, and it's really nice on the table, because I had to look at it, because of course I would. So I'm not exactly sure how I'm going to break this down. I might do, you know, the one starter deck and another starter deck kind of as a package deal so that people can do that, just have the game ready to go. I might do all of them into one giant mega package, but no matter how it looks, there's going to be a lot of Animo that is donated to TavernCon, and I want to make sure that I give them the shout-out because they didn't have to do this. Kickstarters, you know, they're starting out, and they didn't have to donate, but they chose to, and I want to make sure that I give them the shout-out for this and for their kindness. That said, that covers all of my business. I will return you to the episode as we wrap up. Future Mike, out. So, like, that's some of the stuff that's going to be up for raffle this year. If you are listening and you're like, "Man, there's not a chance in the world that I can be a participant of this event, but I do want to support the ministry." If you want, you can send us game donations either by going to like Amazon and sending them to our PO box, or you can just donate the money through our PayPal or through whatever way you want, just to make sure that we can get what we call the regulars prize pack. That is growing, and I'm excited about it. We also, if you want, there's plenty of things that currently cost us money. They are upfront costs to run this event. Things like the biggest one is food. If you want to help us cover costs of food so that more money that gets donated goes directly into making the ministry happen the rest of the year as opposed to making TavernCon happen, that becomes a huge weight off of our shoulders. So, again, you can hit up our donations page on our website for more about that if you want to. Just make sure if you want it to specifically go to either be part of the TavernCon regulars prize pool or you want to cover some specific aspect of TavernCon, please, if you donate online, make some kind of comment to say this is for this purpose. It just helps me with the bookkeeping. Hopefully next time we'll be able to get Mr. Romo back. He's going through all sorts of stuff right now. We'll appreciate your prayers. Quite frankly, all of us will. It has been a rough go for your hosts lately, but at the same point, we love doing this. We love talking with you guys, and we hope to see you again in a couple weeks. I will kind of give one last final shout out before I give the tagline. The Wandering Bards Guild, aka I'm going to get a bunch of guest hosts to cover myself for Bard and Bible during the TavernCon time of the year. The first one of those is coming up next week. Actually, by the time this goes up, it will probably be in a couple days. And it's going to be Ashley Mowers from the MinMax podcast bringing you the first Wandering Bards Bard and Bible episode. So be excited about that. All of that said, all of that covered, before I lose my voice talking about all this stuff, always remember, folks, God is the game master. No matter how the dice fall, the game plays on.